This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your St. Patrick's Day Thursday in America. Good to be with you today. I might be a surprise for a lot of people because I know a lot of people are watching the March Madness tournament. Any big surprises so far in that? I haven't really been
following the scores. The only one I saw was that Iowa had a bit of a close game. They're a 5 seed against the 12, whoever that was.
Least productive work week in the United States all year round.
I really blew it by not getting the games on the TV behind you.
Oh, gosh.
We could have just had you talking to your guest today and just watching the TV.
No one's paying attention.
We could do pre-recorded questions. I'll just play a button.
Yeah, let's.
What's your position on this issue? Just watch basketball.
It'd be like a normal show. No one really cares anyway. So I did say it's St. Patrick's Day. Happy St. Patrick's Day to you and to all the Irish out there. One of the most magnificent things that ever happened to this planet was Ireland and the Irish people. They are wonderful. And per usual, I think I've done this now for about 20-some years in this entire existence here, but as many years as well. Dermot Flanagan is kind enough to join us. He lives right outside of Dublin, Ireland, and he is, of course, a lawyer or barrister in Ireland. He joins us every St. Patrick's Day to talk about all things Irish. Hi, Dermot.
Hi, Matt. That's some introduction. I hope I can live up to that one.
How
are you and happy Patrick's Day?
I'm doing fine. It'll be par for the course if we fail here. So.
Yeah.
It did sound like after 2 years of canceled parades and everything because of the COVID pandemic, that things were kind of opening back up in Ireland again, correct?
Correct, yeah. Everything did open up. We're past any restrictions on the after COVID, and so it's just a fully open economy. And the parade was on today with John C. Reilly, came over from Chicago to lord over it and be the guest of honor. From what I'm watching online, he seems to be enjoying himself in Dublin. I wasn't aware he's a regular guest to the city, so we're lucky to have him.
Well, John C. Reilly, speaking of great choices, I mean, if you're going to get someone Irish, get either a great actor or else get someone who makes everyone laugh, and John C. Reilly is brilliant. That's a great choice for Grand Marshal of the St. Patrick's Day Parade.
Yeah, he seems to be enjoying it. No, the parade was back to normal. 400,000 people in the center of the city today, which isn't a lot in American terms, but that's roughly half the size of the city. Well, no, a little under half the size of the city turning up for the parade. So it was great to be back. Great to see something normal.
And how are things going right now, COVID? I mean, it's like I know, like the United States, there have been, you know, peaks and valleys on this whole pandemic process. Where are you guys at right now with the COVID pandemic?
Well, I mean, statistically, if you like, we're 80% vaccinated, so we're fully open. Schools, parks, shows, live concerts, everything's back open. In total, we had, what did I read, 6,600 deaths throughout the pandemic, and about 1.5 million cases overall. But since it hit the vaccination at 80%, everything's opened up again, and it seems to be back to normal. There's a lot of daily cases, but none of them, not a great percentage being hospitalized. Generally, the vaccine seems to be doing its job for the moment.
Well, and how did Omicron do with Ireland? Did you guys get a big bump with that one?
No, we didn't get a big bump. It came at a time, we were very quick to get vaccinated. I think by the time Omicron hit, we had already hit over 70 or 77% vaccinated. So that was a help. We didn't get the big spread of it we expected from the UK. And it's hard to tell now because the vaccine seems to have worked. The spread is in the schools mainly, but it's not affecting the children very much. There's thankfully none hospitalized. So really, no, if this new variant of Omicron hasn't hit us yet, the one that's kind of looming in China and I think has leaked out a little at this stage, we haven't been hit by that yet.
No, and I know in the United States, from our modeling guy, Joe Eastman, who we've had on the air. He said that there are so many people that got the primary variant of Omicron that the secondary variant so far has really not caught on here. But Germany, Hong Kong, China, they're all having fits with it right now.
Yeah, and you've got to have to see what the effect of having 2 million refugees out of Ukraine spreading across, God help them, you know, how that's going to affect the spread as well. I'm not sure where they were vaccine-wise in Ukraine before the war. Mm-hmm. So, you know, where people are traveling, we have mass movement of people, you have mass movement of everything else as well. So we'll see. I mean, it's the least of their concerns at the moment, but... yeah, I'm sure COVID will. I'm sure COVID, we haven't seen the end of it, but we seem to be over the hump.
We'll definitely talk about Ukraine here in a little bit. I want to talk, did this expose faults within the Irish healthcare system? Because in the United States, one of the things that was very clear is that the healthcare system we had created when this pandemic began was not prepared, especially in rural parts of this country, to deal with a massive pandemic where the medical centers had to be, you know, local community hubs. It was just not prepared for it. And I think we've learned our lesson. How did things go in Ireland? Were there holes exposed?
Well, look, there was no country prepared for a pandemic, none were. But generally speaking, they responded very well. We're very much like Britain. We have a healthcare system for all. So the hospitals were set up for dealing with the public en masse. But no one was. We didn't, for example, have enough ICU units. We didn't have the facilities to set up field hospitals with the help of the military, like, you know, America might have. So what they did was the government took over hotels and conference centres for the duration and set up field hospitals in those. And, you know, people came out of retirement, nurses came out, paramedics came out and you know, lent a hand. And they got on top of it. I'm going to give them credit. They got on top of it very quickly. But there isn't any country in the world, anyone across Europe, anyone across the United States or anywhere else that was ready for this.
Did you have a lot of...
You've got to be honest.
Well, did you have a lot of people like we had where, like, the vaccines are... Bill Gates is trying to track you and make you a lizard man, you know? Did you have a lot of that?
No, I passed a protest. I was down in Cork in the south one day, and I passed a protest, anti-vaxxers, and there were five people. I nearly joined them because I'm feeling sorry for them. No, we did. Luckily, we didn't have a lot of anti-vaxxers. We have people to complain about just about everything, but we didn't really get the anti-vax brigade.
I got to imagine when you see, because I mean, now once again, what's the population of Ireland right now?
Oh, touching 5 million, basically. So
we have 5.7 million here in Minnesota. Okay, you said you had 6,600 deaths. We had 12,000, and I think the difference. Yeah, the difference is the fact that we had large swaths of the state where the belligerent idiots basically just kept saying, "I'm not going to get vaxxed, but I don't want." They kept wanting to go out and get their drinks and go out and get their appetizers, and you know it was really kind of a full fledged display of selfishness here in the United States.
Well, look, I mean, we were I watched the news, I watched the states, especially your state a lot because of you. I can see the polarization and it's pretty sad. Having said that, you know, you also have very large cities, you have large transport systems, you have a culture of apartment living and condo living. So you had a lot more to fight against. We're a bit more spread out. Mm-hmm. It's going to spread through a city like Minneapolis far quicker than it is through, you know, any rural region or town in Ireland.
Mm. Well, and
give yourself a chance.
Well, and also it's kind of one of those things where there still is a, and I don't want to say it quaintness, but there still is a lot of people that just generally they work and they live and they spend most of their time around their house, you know, as opposed to, you know, Minneapolis where you're constantly, we'll go to St. Paul, we'll go, you know, you go to Wisconsin. There's so much more traveling over here. Yeah, I mean, it was kind of a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's absolutely true. But and even from eating out, it's you know, generally everyone still cooks at home and eats at home, except for the weekend. So there's a lot of that. But we did shut down. We shut down very quickly. As early as April 2020, we shut down everything.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was, it wasn't, I saw the debates in the States and all that. When we say shut down, we shut down every bar, every restaurant, every sporting event, every music event, and we quite literally locked the country down. The first time was locked down for 3 weeks, then it was opened up again partially, then it locked down for 2 months and opened again partially. I mean, we spent 2 years in effective lockdown. Now, and that was with the cooperation of the people. I don't think you were going to get that across all of the states.
Well, did you have any pubs that were like, you know what, the heck with this, I'm opening up? Did you have anyone try that like we had here?
No. That would have been a serious offense, and they didn't. They wouldn't be trading. No, we had complete lockdown. Now, of course, the government stepped in, and Europe stepped in. Europe had, a €2 trillion euro fund, and people were paid to keep the businesses closed. Mm. And they were paid to keep them closed and paid to keep their employees at home. Mm. So it worked, but it was a real, genuine lockdown, and nothing was happening.
I do want to mention your dear son he's asymptomatic, right? He's got it, but he's asymptomatic, right?
Yeah, he's a 6'2" monster. He's in there, he's sitting in there, he's enjoying it. He's getting his food delivered up to him in his room. He's on his PlayStation. He's got his bass guitar. No sympathy for him. I'll tell him you have sympathy for him, but he's fine.
Tell him the poor, wretched Americans have sympathy for him. we feel for him. Because your schools, as you said, your schools are up and going, and they've, you know, once you got to that 80% threshold, pretty much everything, okay, we're good.
Yeah, fine. That's exactly what they did. So we're good. We're going to take now whatever comes. And so far, it's worked. How long is that now? That's, 3 months old now?
Yeah.
So it's not that long ago.
Heaven forbid we allow science to have a say in this country, for God's sakes.
no comment. I've been watching some of your news anchors recently, and I'm mistaking them for the Comedy Channel, but we...
Oh, we'll get to that, too, here in just a little bit. One thing, the last time you and I talked, we had the thing of Brexit hanging over. And, of course, Ireland had the unique situation where Northern Ireland was – there's an open border with Northern Ireland and Ireland, but yet with England leaving and part of the United Kingdom is Northern Ireland, there was going to put – people were saying, are you going to put a hard border back up? That was never going to be a go.
Yeah.
They ended up basically creating their own kind of province with Northern Ireland where it's kind of separated from the rest of the United Kingdom. How are things going with that?
Well, that's not well. How things are going is we hit the pandemic and then we hit the war in Ukraine. That has not sorted itself out. It's in limbo. It's there's no final agreement between Europe and Britain on the treatment of Northern Ireland. Northern Ireland is very peculiar. It's a tiny portion of Ireland. It's got six counties. Got in total population of about 1.1 million people. And it is mostly agricultural. The cities are large-scale unemployment. It's completely different in the south. I mean, the south at the moment, on paper, with its GDP, is wealthier than UK, France, Germany, or even the US at the moment on paper, whereas the north is akin to the UK, which is in a bit of a spiral at the moment. That problem's not gone away. It's just other things have overtaken it. Mm-hmm. And at the moment, the border runs down the Irish Sea. And I wouldn't even get into the technicalities of what is checked going between North and South and North and the UK and what isn't. It would take a very long time. Suffice to say that when things settle down, that will still be there to be resolved. And it's not going to be resolved easily.
You know, it's one of the things...
It's not affecting the economy in the South. The economy in the South is booming. But it's having a hugely detrimental effect on the North.
Since I've known you, since I've had the privilege of knowing you, I've it's been interesting because we've watched Ireland go from a country that was, you know, having, you know, kind of, they couldn't get out of their own way economically. And now they are, you know, because of where they're at today, they're stronger and stronger. And it was interesting when I've been to Ireland with you and we went up to the border and the difference between the two countries. I mean, the UK treats Northern Ireland wildly different than the Irish. And there is a marked difference in those two areas. And once again, I can't believe too many people in Northern Ireland are happy with how the British government is treating them.
It's difficult. If you're, it's about 50-50 up north, divided between union, those who would like to remain part of the UK and those who would like to reunite with the South. It's about 50-50. All of them, 100% of them, would love to be part of the South economically and have what's going on down here. It's just politics, as in, and, you know, where their loyalties lie. The British themselves, I'm pretty sure the majority of Britain would love to divest themselves of Northern Ireland. It costs them 10 billion euros a year to run it. Mm. And I heard a bit, just the way things kind of link up, Britain were talking about having to extend or increase their defence spending by 10 billion a year because of this new Cold War. And I thought to myself, well, there's a very easy way to get that 10 billion, just bugger out of Northern Ireland and give it to us. You won't be spending 10 billion up there every year. But like, it's incredible that you're right. It's not that Britain treats them unfairly. In fact, they cost Britain a fortune. It's that it's a very difficult issue, and one which kind of is, it's going to resolve itself again. Time.
Well, and it should be mentioned too that there is, I don't know of anyone. I read the Irish papers too. I don't know anyone in Northern Ireland who doesn't want to have that open border with Ireland. They see the value there. And so it's what's interesting is there definitely seems to be a shift in the mentality of the pro-union guys. And don't get me wrong, I know there's a lot of guys up there that are, you know, UK all the way, and they're not going to change. But at the same time, there is this understanding that, yeah, you can't just shut down Ireland now, because this is a good relationship with Northern Ireland and Ireland. And at the very least, yeah, as you said, on one side, you could just give them back. And I think most people there would be economically thrilled. But the reality is that even with the two separate entities, that open border is something that both sides see as value.
The open border is that nobody wants to close the border. On an agricultural side, and perhaps if your listeners out in the state, they'll understand this. Quite a substantial amount of the Northern Irish herd of cattle is milked in the south of Ireland. Quite enough. You know, literally the border, you have to understand these borders are open. Like if you're walking across a field and, you know, you take a step and suddenly you're like, oh, well, that's Northern Ireland. You just take a step backwards. Oops, there's the south. And you just take another, you know, that's the way it is. So, it is literally the case that the dairies that process the milk from a lot of the Northern Irish farmers are in the southern side. And vice versa, there'd be other back and forward in relation to agricultural products. There's very little other industry in Northern Ireland, whereas Southern Ireland has all the international, high-tech companies, communication companies and information centres. And a lot of the Northern Irish drive down, which only an hour away to Dublin from Belfast, mm-hmm. and they go to work in Dublin and the surrounding counties. So the entirety of the country would be a fraction of the size of your average state in America. Mm-hmm. So it is a bit ridiculous on many levels.
Well, and what you're hearing for the listeners here is that, you know, you think going to Canada is easy. It's nothing compared to how easy it is to go between Northern Ireland and Ireland. And this was the problem with Brexit, which, once again, the people that were for Brexit never really thought about until, hey, what about Northern Ireland? And it was like, that was poorly thought out. But that is Britain today.
But it's broader than that. You know, my wife's from London.
Yes.
You know, Helen's from London. The majority of the British people don't think about it because they don't particularly, they don't care, but I don't mean that in a negative way. It's just that it's not something on their radar. It's not particularly on our radar on a day-to-day basis. It's something that we all wish and hope for in terms of the union. But in reality, the economies, the economics of the North and South run very, very well together. And both North and South have equal concern in keeping that going. It's just ironically, this tiny percentage, very small percentage of diehards in the union side would rather see the Northern Irish economy go down the drain rather than come up with some agreement where they would be one foot in Britain and one foot out, if you know what I mean.
Well,
it's ridiculous. But it certainly doesn't. The South doesn't rely on the North. But certainly doesn't want to see any harm being brought to the North economically.
The same Britain that's rail, you're probably going to need a passport to get to Edinburgh before too long up there. Right? Let's just be honest. They're not exactly running that place great.
No, and but it's crazy. Just statistically, again, you know, we had the pandemic, and then we had this Ukrainian war has shielded conversation. It stopped conversation going on the effects of Brexit. I can tell you just, I mean, statistically, 45%, Britain are exporting 45% less to EU countries since Brexit. 45% less. And it's not because they don't want to export to EU countries. It's because the paperwork and the difficulties in the supply chain are so high that other countries just simply have stopped trading with them. They've looked elsewhere. And I mean, it's very difficult for them. And that's going to come home to roost at some stage. It's incredible to think that we only trade now between 10 and 13% a year of our exports with the UK. And that would have been much higher years ago because our companies have found alternative markets because of the difficulties of dealing with Brexit.
Dermot Flanagan joining us. Pardon me, go ahead, continue.
No, that's it. That's, go ahead.
Dermot Flanagan's joining us, of course, a lawyer in the Dublin area, a barrister. Is it barrister? Barrister.
Solicitor, but you know, it's six of one, half dozen the other.
Solicitor sounds like you're looking for a hooker, man. I mean, I'm a solicitor.
No
hello.
We'll just use lawyer.
Okay, we'll just use. It's like, hey, I'm using solicitor because that's perfect. Hey, here's what, Dermot. I'm going to put you on the spot here because one of the things that we've never done, you have advised me and reading about Irish history, and you have given me some great books. And so I'm going to put you on the spot right now, since it is St. Patrick's Day. Why don't you, do you have a few books that if people wanted to learn good, the good Irish history that you think are, yeah, this is the book that will get you everything you need. Is there any books that you off the top of your head that you can think of? That'd be good?
I'll give you an author. And he's written several books, and he's unbiased. In other words, he doesn't take sides. Tim Pat Coogan. He's written books on all the major personalities in Irish history, Michael Collins, De Valera. He's written on the IRA and the history of it. But he's also written an excellent book, is about the Irish abroad, or the Irish diaspora. Basically about the Irish who went to America. It's a fantastic book as well. But anything by Tim Pat Coogan that you can get your hands on, and he covers everything, unless you want to go way, way back to Tudor Ireland, in which case you're looking at Professor Ellis, but you really want to be interested to go that far back.
Who's Professor Ellis?
If you can find anything by, you really want to go back a long way.
Okay.
But anything by Tim Pat Coogan, and you'll cover.
Okay.
You'll cover the history perfectly.
Well,
I've had the great pleasure of meeting him once, and a wonderful man.
Well, did you? Where was that at?
In a bar in Kerry with my brother, who'd be a good friend of his. Yeah, that didn't end well, but it was well worth the visit.
Okay. like 90% of all meetings that happen in Ireland, a pub's involved. And so, and
yeah,
about 50-50 on how those turn out. You know, I think that's one of the things about Irish history in this country is because we do have a very perverted version of it. Because the Irish that came here that basically made the Irish blossom in this country, they basically were fleeing for their lives. Most of them came over in the 1800s. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love that scene in the movie Gangs of New York where they basically take the Irish right off the boat and put them into the U.S. military to fight in the Civil War. Even, and that was actually, that's true. That stuff like that happened. And
did I ever tell you my grandfather landed on November 17th, 1917. And my grandfather was a big man. He was 6'2", which is very unusual for his time. And he got off the boat, and his doctor at home, like some of his friends were going with him to America, had given him notes to say they had heart murmurs or heart problems so they wouldn't be conscripted. And he landed in Ellis Island. The story goes, himself and his friends, some American looked at them, put them on a boat, and they were enlisted in the American Army the same day. And he served his time in the American Army till after World War One. They ended up a rifle instructor up in Iowa.
In Iowa, really?
Sounds like a rifle instructor. Iowa or Indiana. I must check that. I have the paperwork. Wow. I have a great photograph of him in his uniform.
I didn't realize they were doing that in the World War One.
Yeah, basically they ripped up his notes from home and said, "Yeah, I'm not believing that." He was brought over and, you know, said, "Sign there." I don't know if it was a conscription or just, "Look, buddy, you'd like it in this army," and off he went. Yeah. So that was it's a great story. We got some of the paperwork from the archives, the American Legion archives, recently.
Nice. Wonderful. And there's so many, people that have those connections, which are, you know, and that's just a treasure, because not only it isn't just the Irish history, it's the American history too, which is so important. So that's so cool. Next time I come over there, I want to see that stuff if you can. I'd love to see that.
Yeah, no, I'll mail it to you. It's really cool. It's nice to see. We have great photographs of when he died at 99 years of age, and the embassy here still sent people up to do a ceremony at his graveside with the flag, etc.
No wonder. Wow.
So, you know.
Very, very nice.
Yeah, it was. Anyway, distracting you from Patrick's Day.
Well, no problem. Tell you what, we're going to take a break. When we come on back, we're actually both going to get distracted from St. Patrick's Day. I want to talk about Ukraine and the Irish perspective on what's going on over there. Dermot Flanagan joining us once again. It's an annual tradition for St. Patrick's Day. We are talking to him live in Ireland. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show on St. Patrick's Day. And since it's St. Patrick's Day, and I'm on the air still, Dermot Flanagan's joining us. He is a lawyer from the Dublin area, and he's kind enough to join us today to talk about all things Irish. But I mean, obviously, the thing that's clouding up Dermot is clouding everyone's horizon is what's going on in Ukraine. And there's, I think, a lot of people that might be saying, okay, well, it's Ireland. Is this a really big deal? The reality is the distance from Dublin to Kyiv is basically the distance from Minneapolis to Sacramento. And so this is, it's something that is, you know, it's not that far away from you. First of all, your thoughts, when all this started to happen, what was going through Ireland's mind at this point?
Well, I don't know about Ireland's mind, but I mean, most people were expecting it. Just historically, this thing was set up from 2008 with the Donbass, and then it was 2014, the annexation of Crimea. And everybody's expecting Putin to do this and to go into Ukraine. I mean, if you want to go back further, since Maastricht, since the European Union pushed its way a little bit prematurely, in my mind, but all the way to Russian Federation's borders, people expected trouble with Russia then. It didn't happen because they weren't ready. So historically, this was not unexpected. The manner in which he's gone in and the just the horrendous way he's bombing cities, that's unexpected. I mean, that's primitive. We thought it might be more a little bit more stealthy, that he might be trying a coup, he might be trying to force, if you like, to change political regime some way, but this kind of World War II tactics is frightening Europe to a large extent. And I mean, I said at the beginning, 2 million refugees already going across Europe. Mm-hmm. From Ireland's point of view, we have so far 6,600 odd refugees arrived, women and children. The government have set up, they've taken over hotels and put them in hotels while they wait to vet households, the people that live with ordinary households. There's already a child in my youngest daughter, she's 12, a Ukrainian child in her class. Mm. At this time, and we're expecting 20,000 shortly, a total of 20,000. But if the war becomes protracted, we could have as many as 100,000 in Ireland, within the medium term. So, yeah, I mean, what's Ireland's thoughts? It's a dreadful, dreadful thing that's happened, and Europe's just going to have to absorb all these refugees while we try and figure out what to do.
When this started, wasn't there supposed to be some sort of naval game with Russia in Irish waters, and Ireland said, "Oh, the heck with that! No, we're not doing that."
No, there wasn't with Ireland. I mean, we have a coast guard. I don't think you can call it a navy. They do a great job, but their job is to protect fishing and look out for, you know, basically drug trafficking. That's basically it. Now, we don't have we have a small coast guard. What it was the Russians were carrying out. They were carrying out maneuvers in our waters, all to do with showing Britain that they could get around. And it was the Irish fishermen, fishing boats, trawlers, that went out and created a line in front of a Russian warships. And you know, and there was a dialogue and basically said, we don't want you in our waters. And the Russian fleet changed course, you know, more because I'd probably be bad publicity to, you know, run over a bunch of Irish fishing boats. But yeah, there was a confrontation would be too big a word for it. But there was definitely, there was a moment in time when, yeah, when Ireland were facing up to Russia, which is, that fight wouldn't have lasted long.
Well, are we sure? Let's face it, the Russian military is not exactly the feared actually, machine.
Yeah, maybe one of the guys could have found the plug at the bottom of the warship and just pulled it, you know. you know, made in China on it, you know.
A little bit of a design flaw there on those boats. There's no one in Ireland. No one in Ireland is on Russia's side on this, I'm presuming. Pretty much everyone is.
No. Everyone, I don't know anyone who's on Russia. We've no Tucker Carlsons here. We've no we've no lunatics screaming and shouting like they know things. Everybody is firmly on the Ukrainian side. Someone drove a truck through the gates of the Russian embassy in Dublin recently. Mm. Nothing in it, no explosives or anything, just ran down the gates just to make a point. Mm. The Russian ambassador was very angry over that. No, it's very much pro the Ukrainians. How could we not be, you know, the self-determination, the rights of people, etc. But we don't know where it's going to end. Mm-hmm.
You brought up, and I want to make sure this is for the record. I was talking to you a little earlier today, and you just out of the blue said, "What the hell is with Tucker Carlson?" And I'm like, and you guys, how the heck are you guys even seeing him over there?
We have all the channels, but I occasionally, if I have the stomach for it and want to laugh, I'll turn on Fox News, and I came across him. I knew he was there. I knew him from Trump's time, but I came across a particular rant of his talking about Putin and Russia and Ukraine, and it was so bizarre and so out, I mean, just so out of sync with reality. I started turning him on pretty regularly. it's just funny. But I realized he's taken seriously, but he's a comedy, and now he's become a bit of a thing here where people will have their Tucker Carlson moment. They'll turn him on and say the next day, "Hey, did you hear him last night?"
The Tucker Carlson moment.
Yeah, nobody takes him seriously, but they all find him quite hilarious. So that, you know, you'll be. I was down in the forecourts a few days ago. Sorry, the forecourts are the courts in the center of town where I spend a lot of time, and they're known as the forecourts because the forecourts exist there. But I was walking by one of my friends and colleagues, and he calls me over and shows me on his phone. He said, "Hey, look, there's a Carlson moment." He's just showing me. Sorry, but it's become a bit of a laugh. Hope I'm not offending anybody.
No, I think the fact that, I mean, what we can honestly say from what you just said is that this guy's a laughing stock. I mean, outside of Russian oligarchs and Putin and about 7 million Americans, he's a laughing stock. He's an embarrassment. And the fact that he said, "Oh, I pulled a Tucker Carlson," I mean, the fact that that is what the rest of the world is doing, I mean, it just, you know, the delusion of these people in this country is amazing. And yet when we hear this, I mean, they still think you want Trump over Biden. They are still convinced that the Irish, for example, were so much happier with Donald Trump than Joe Biden, that boy, oh boy, they're just clamoring to get Trump back in there. And they don't even listen to the people of the countries they're claiming to represent.
We would love to see Biden over here. I know it may not happen. He's a lot to do and all that. But there'd be a bit of a festival atmosphere if Biden came to visit. It put a smile on even my parents' my mother's 87. It put a smile on her face when Biden got elected, because you know, obviously she'd be thinking of Kennedy and people like that. So yeah, he would be a welcome guest.
He
doesn't have to buy a golf course.
I think one of the things that's you know, as you watch what's going on in Ukraine, and you see this in this country at least, and I mean, I know it doesn't happen nearly as much or with volume, as you said, five protesters. But, you know, it doesn't happen in Ireland as much. But I think one of the things that we are learning is that, you know, real heroism, real valor is not getting in a truck and driving and blocking a road in a Canada city or basically screaming at a school board about, you know, wearing a face mask to try to keep other people, you know, healthy. That it's these cool. these images which are haunting of people that look like a book club, a women who look like they're in a book club grabbing guns and going out to take on the Russian army. And I mean, it is truly amazing when you look at these people that the Ukrainians, as they're holding on. I got to tell you the truth. I'm so impressed with how that military, the Ukrainians, have held back the Russians. And once again, the Russians, not exactly the fighting force we thought they were, but still at the same time, they have a manpower advantage. They've got a weapons advantage. And frankly, the Ukrainians are kicking their butts.
Well, they were in 2008. They were basically an unorganized or disorganized army. The British started training them in 2008. Mm. The British have been training them since the disturbances in the East in 2008, and they trained them even more after 2014. And they have changed them from a territorial type army to a very professional army, and that's quite evident. That gives them 14 years, they have come a long way. Mm-hmm. And that's down to being trained by a professional army, effectively. But on the Ukraine as well, we have, I think, over 200,000 Polish living here. Mm-hmm. I have been told by the Polish, who I have a lot of Polish clients, I've been told for the last 5 years, maybe since 2016 even, that Putin was going to do this. Mm. The Polish have been waiting for it. In fact, they've nearly doubled the size of their army in that time. They've brought back national service. A lot of Polish here got their sons to take Irish passports, even though they didn't need to because they have European passports. They can stay here quite happily, but they didn't want their sons going back to do national service because the Polish have been expecting this for a very long time. And so have the Lithuanians, the Estonians, the Latvians. So, you know, all of those countries who've experienced, if you like, Russia before, they knew this was coming. Mm-hmm. They knew this was coming, and they've been preparing for it.
If I was Russia,
interesting from that point of view.
If I was Russia, I'd be incredibly concerned the Chinese at this point. I mean, obviously outside of the European realm, but you know, their biggest border, their biggest threat is the Chinese. And if I'm the Chinese, I'm looking at these guys as like, we're scared of these guys. Why again? Oh, okay, nukes, fine, but you know, we could take their military in a few days if we really wanted to do so. I think at the end of the day, it's, you know, Russia, when you have cases like this, despots become despots. And what we're seeing now with Putin is, as you're saying, he's attacking cities. He's attacking, you know, shelters where children are at. He's attacking food lines. I mean, they don't have any other place to attack because they can't take on the Ukrainians straight head forth because they get beat.
Well, here's the thing. You mentioned China. I don't think Xi Jinping would be an easy bedfellow with Putin for this reason. Whatever you think about China, and, you know, they certainly don't do things our way in the West, he is an idealist. Mm-hmm. He believes in the Chinese way, prosperity for the people, development for China. And I don't think he's an internationalist. I think he just wants to be left alone in China, Taiwan excluded. I don't think he's any ambition outside that. But he doesn't want to do it the way we do it. He's not about to introduce democracy into China. He believes the Chinese, him and his party believe the Chinese need to be led. But he's an idealist. And I think he recognizes that Putin is not an idealist. Putin's just a gangster.
Yes, he is.
He's just a head of a mafia. And he's, in that regard, he has no principles. Now, Xi Jinping does. They're not the ones we agree with. They're not ours. But he has them. And so I don't think this idea that everyone's worried that Xi Jinping, you know, might come to the aid of Russia or might take the time to invade Taiwan because Russia's in Ukraine. I don't think that's likely. I just don't think they're easy bedfellows. I think they're completely different people. You're dealing with an idealist versus just a mafia head.
Do the Irish think that we should that NATO should basically give whatever Ukraine needs to them, planes, everything?
Well, I can't speak for the Irish, but I don't believe that is. I mean, I don't think that's a general take. I do have some friends who are members of our parliament, our Dáil, as we call it here, and I don't think, being practical hat on, I don't think that's a good idea. I don't think it's a good idea to enforce a no-fly.
Uh-oh. Did we just
lost him there?
We lost him.
I'll try to call him.
I'll tell you what. Let's take the break. We're at a good time anyway. We'll take a break. We'll come back and see if we can get Dermot back on the line with us. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show, St. Patrick's Day edition. Dermot Flanagan, apparently, Dermot said this, Putin must have got you, right?
Yeah, I was knocked off. I better be careful what I say. I take it all back.
No, you don't. Well, you were mentioning the Ukrainians about, you know, funding them. We were talking about whether or not we should give them all the materials they need, and you're not quite sure there. That's when you cut out.
No, you should give them all the materials, everything, but when you get into aircraft and you get into no-fly zones, you're talking about direct confrontation with NATO and invoking Article 5, et cetera. And, you know, nobody wants to expand this to a World War III. And if you give Putin an excuse to go back to his people and say, see, NATO are attacking us. You know, the Russians are very nationalistic people. They're very proud people. They're very blinded by the propaganda they've had for years. And the last thing you want is to encourage his troops who are currently giving up and surrendering and encourage others to join the fight in Russia, you know, by saying this is a genuine fight, East versus West. So I unfortunately, much as I would love to do everything in the power for the Ukrainians, I think the way it's going is the way it's going to have to keep going. They are getting British anti-aircraft missiles at the moment that can be used at nighttime, and they'll be there soon. So I think they already have partially taken back the skies. And if they can keep going that way, it looks like the ground is theirs already, frankly.
Well, and the Russian economy has been decimated. I mean, they're trying to keep it clean. I mean, I think that's the impressive thing about what the United States and NATO did is that basically you took one of the world's leading economies and crushed it in 2 weeks. And I'm like, yeah, Saudi Arabia, you better pay attention to this because, you know, it was kind of one of those things where I'm going to be surprised if Putin isn't taken out by one of his own oligarchs.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't think the oligarchs themselves can get close to him, but he's put his, did I read that he has put his spy chief and a few of those under house arrest?
Yeah.
So that's a sign of paranoia. Apparently, it's going to be very hard to get to him. He doesn't have anyone close to him. I think, look, like all change comes from the people. Ukraine got their revolution on the streets when the previous president... do you remember what happened in Ukraine? There was a vote as to whether they wanted to effectively do a trade agreement with Russia or a trade agreement with Europe. The people voted for a trade agreement with Europe, and their president overturned it. They rebelled, they ousted him, and Ukraine got itself its first, you know, freely elected president. Let's call it that. There was a few changes, but effectively the people make changes, and unless the Russian people want change, there's not going to be one. Mm. You know, it has to, unfortunately, it has to start there. And anywhere you go, anywhere in Eastern Europe where it's happened, where we've had these, in Libya, anywhere we've had these revolutions where the people have said enough is enough, it starts with the people. Mm. So you can replace Putin and just another guy will take his place just like him unless the Russians themselves decide we don't want this anymore.
I think we should take every one of the oligarchs' yachts and make them Ukrainian homes. You know, put as many. That would be perfect, wouldn't it? It's like, we're going to put 50 people on this boat, can sleep 50, so we're going to put 50 Ukrainians on it as we take it.
Convert them to hospitals. You know, sell them and put the money into the Ukrainian funds. Do anything it takes to help the Ukrainians. There's nothing sadder than watching those pictures every night on television of them going across the border. And then women and children, and then the men turning around and going back. Mm-hmm. It's barbaric, really.
Well,
and the Ukrainians are incredible people, and I see what were they saying? Over 16,000 in the foreign brigade now, and increasing. They're expecting 60,000 fighters going from other countries to join the Ukrainians.
And that's fantastic, too. Well, and I mean, I want to give not just Ireland, but a lot of places in Europe are doing a lot of great things. A lot of people there, you know, the hotels that are getting people in there and the people that are helping the Ukrainians. Nice job on the Irish as they're doing. It seems like they're doing a fine job as well.
Yeah, I think Biden got to speak with our Taoiseach, Micheál Martin, today. He's over in Washington, but he had to speak to him by Zoom because he contracted COVID. Oh. So he couldn't get to meet him face to face. But the two of them were talking about Ukraine as well. And I don't think there's a single country in the West who thinks any differently. And I think that surprised Putin. It really has. To some extent, he might have misjudged America through his, through Trump.
Yeah.
Because certainly, had Trump still been in power, I don't think America would have galvanized itself like it has done. I think he's actually been quite shocked by the strength of the ability of the Biden administration to bring NATO together when they looked like they were so far apart.
Yeah, I
think that really caught him.
Trump, he thought he had tenderized the United States down. The United States said, "Okay, let's ruin your economy in 2 weeks. Now you tell us who's the superpower." And so,
it was, and by the way, who the super military is, because there must be a lot of American generals looking at each other, going, "We trained for this," can you imagine if that Russian army was up against a modern European or American?
It would be embarrassing. It would be embarrassing. All right, we only got about a few minutes left here. I want to get back to Ireland if we can.
Yeah.
Borders opening up. People are going to be traveling again. I want your recommendation. You're saying you've got a person saying, "I'm coming to Ireland. I want to just go see something that's just gorgeous and fun." Where should they go?
Well, you know what I'm going to say. I'm going to say start in Dublin, get it out of the system, and then go straight to Galway.
Galway.
Just be careful when you go to Galway, because many, many people go there and far few return. They just fall in love with the place and stay.
Yes, we should make sure it's because they like going to Galway. It's not like there's a serial killer running around.
No, they just stay. They just stay because they forget they were supposed to leave.
Oh, yeah.
We used to call it the graveyard of ambition, because once you went there, nothing else mattered. You just stayed. It just became a series of music and bars and dancing and partying, and then starts all over again. So just be careful if you go to Galway. Cork, after that, you have to go down and see Cork. You won't understand a word they say, but you'll love the place. And after that, just give me a call and I'll point out the rest.
I will say this about Galway. Your assertion is absolutely correct. I think about Galway probably once a week or so, about how magnificent that town is. It is really great. Happy St. Patrick's Day. All my best to your boy.
I will. I'll tell him to stop whinging.
All my best to your wife and the girls. Dermot, it is an absolute pleasure to be able to chat with you every year on St. Patrick's Day. You represent the Irish very well. And, all my best, my friend. I hope to see you before too long.
Yeah, look, thanks to you and everyone at the station. It's great. Thanks for the opportunity and best of luck. Yeah, we hope to see you before too long as well. Just even a short hop over and back to get over there.
All right. Dermot Flanagan, a lawyer outside of Dublin, kind enough to join us as he always does on St. Patrick's Day. Thanks, Dermot. We do appreciate it. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. If you did want to chime in on anything Dermot had to say, we can take calls at the beginning of the next hour. I've already gotten four people asking about whether or not what was the name of the author? Tim Pat Coogan was the name of the author he recommended. Tim Pat Coogan. Once again, he says it's not ancient Irish history, but you're going to get a lot of the people of the modern day and kind of the bigger figures over the last 100 plus, 100, 200 years or so. So go check that out. And go to Ireland and go to Galway. Holy God, oh, Galway. It is as magnificent. And trust me, the people there are just as beautiful as anything you've ever seen in your life. It is just magnificent. Happy St. Patrick's Day to everyone out there. We'll take a break. Hour number two coming up next. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show. Matt and Brett here. Once again, Dermot Flanagan, we'll spotlight that interview. It's a full hour with the guy, but God, I could just... Well, he's a good friend. I mean, I've known him for years. He's the godfather of all three of my kids. He's the godfather.
We need to use his phrase whenever someone makes a mistake. Oh, sorry. I pulled the tucker.
It's not just him. Tucker Carlson has become the synonymous with I screwed up, or I've said something ludicrous in Ireland, which, by the way, is like totally Irish. It is very Irish to do something like that. But you pulled a Tucker Carlson. He said that, he just said to me, oh, by the way, what's up with Tucker Carlson? I'm like, jeez. I didn't even know. This is, if you want the epitome of why this set up media is a really bad idea, is because look at how Ireland, this is what they see of America. Don't fool yourself. Fox News, Tucker Carlson, all they care about are the 7 million or so viewers they have on his show. In a country of 330 million people, he's not saying anything that's appealing to the masses. He's only saying things that appeal to that 7 million people that stroke that dude's ego. All right. And don't get me wrong. Those are good numbers. I mean, that's the last I saw was he was getting that about that, or at least one or two nights he was getting that. But that's all he cares about. This is a country of 330 million people and only 7 million people look at him. But look at the platform he has been given. And the fact that, you know, the rest of the world looks at him and laughs at him and laughs at the United States for allowing this guy to be on the air. And he's got freedom of speech. He really can't stop that, I guess. But at the same time, we need it. In this country, we treat Tucker Carlson as viable counterpoint to reality. And the reality is he is not viable counterpoint. He is a buffoon. And until we stop that, unless we, and this is, like I said, this was, when you look at the history of cable news and how we got here to this point, you go back to about the early 1990s when the cigarette companies were being taken on, and they basically said, well, our own research shows that cigarettes are minty fresh and great for you. And because cable news and TV and media just were getting bought up and they just didn't care, they basically started going with, well, we'll have to agree to disagree. And you should never, no, reality and facts do not need to be counterpointed. That's the sun. We can all agree it's the sun. It's the big glowing ball in the sky. So if someone comes up and says, that's a tuna fish sandwich, you don't have to say, well, we agree to disagree. No, it's not a tuna fish sandwich. It's a ball of fire in the sky. You're an idiot. And that's all you have to say. But yet, here we are. Here we are. And that's what you get. Are you doing anything fun and exciting for your St. Patrick's Day?
I'm going to a friend's place tonight, having a few people over. So we're going to have a little fun tonight. St. Patrick's Day.
Are we going to make bad decisions tonight? Or are you going to watch basketball? You're going to watch basketball. Well, you see, that's actually the cool thing about this. How has this never hit before? Or at least I can't remember it hitting like this.
It had to have 2 years ago because I know it was on a Thursday. In 2020, they didn't do it in NCAA.
Yeah, that's right. They didn't, did they?
Yeah, that's probably why.
It's rare that this happens, I think, where you got the first day of the NCAA tournament, you got this, you know, I think you can avoid the green beer. If it's green, that's not right.
No, okay? I'm not doing that. Yeah.
I am doing my corned beef and cabbage. Once again, corned beef and cabbage, nothing to do with Ireland, nothing to do with Ireland. But it has to do with American Irish who were, once again, when they got here, were the persecuted class, were hated, and they took the scraps of society and turned it into a delicious dish. The corning is pickling, basically. They pickled the worst cuts of meat and they turned it into this beautiful thing because I love me some corned beef, man. That is one of my favorite things. That is American Irish, 100%. St. Patrick's Day really kind of got really rolling in the United States. It is something that was mentioned over there, but not, it became a celebration because it was celebrated so much here. And so, Ireland is a brilliant place. And when I was stationed in the military over there, and I went and I was able to travel around and I met the Irish. And to give you an idea where the Irish economy is today, when I got there all summer long, the entire city of Nuremberg, Germany was, I would say it was 100,000 Irish people. Just, it was a massive amount. All these college students, because there were no jobs in Ireland. So they would all come over to Germany And they would work in, there was a big bookbinding company there. There was also a pencil manufacturer there. And they'd work in these jobs and make as much money as they could. And they'd drink all night long. And sweet Jesus, if there was an Olympic drinking team, the Irish are gold, you know, all the time. But God, they're brilliant. And, you know, I fell in love with them. They're just absolutely the most brilliant. Just they're happy. They have music. They've got weird beer. The food, underestimated, undervalued. Irish food is amazing. Is amazing. Whether it's the lamb or the seafood, oh, just fantastic. And everywhere you go in Ireland, you know that whole thing about Instagram? Everywhere you go, you look, you could take a picture and it'd be, wow, that's a great picture. Wow, that's amazing. Wow, that's green. It is. Have you ever been to Ireland?
I have not, no. That would be one of the places I would want
Dermot,
to go to.
Dermot, you've got now an invite from Dermot.
I know, yeah, yeah. Some good recommendations on where to go to.
Oh, God. Galway, man. Go to Galway. Galway is amazing. I love Minneapolis and St. Paul, and so there's always fun things to do there. It's every day, every single day. It's live music and great music. Live music, fresh seafood, you know, a few Irish ladies, and wool sweaters, which are really toasty warm. I mean, those sweaters.
Oh, I bet, yeah.
You can get an Irish drum. Oh, St. Patrick's Day. Here back in the United States, we're all, no. I mean, you're keeping an eye. I mean, Iowa lost in that first game of the, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure if they lost. The one I'm watching, which should scare everybody, well, okay, is Gonzay.
Wait, we're doing a radio show. You're watching? What are you
watching? The score, not the game. Yeah. I don't have the subscription where I can watch the thing. Although Gonzaga is up by 8 points now.
No, okay, thank God.
There goes everyone's bracket. Yeah, as you said though, we were talking during the break. I mean, Gonzaga messes this up every single year.
God, they do. They screw this up. They do it with abandon too. Oh, reckless abandon. If that's not your mode of exercise, here it is. What do we call the elderly hipster? Because there's the hipster, and we've talked about these guys. They're wearing scarves, you know, organic honey. Their scooters, their hammocks, and you know, we've talked about them. You're on notice. Hipsters. But what do we call old hipsters? And they're not hippies, are they? Oh, these guys aren't hippies.
Hippies is kind of a certain age now at this point.
So here's the deal. They're doing it now too. A Twin Cities pickleball craze has attracted an Iowa-based company that builds massive indoor-outdoor pickleball venues into the area. West Des Moines-based Smash Park, considering the clientele of the standard pickleball court, Smash Park, dude, you're sounding too much like a Mountain Dew ad. Yeah. Smash Park announced Tuesday will open two of its 30,000 square foot venues here. 30,000 square foot venues of pickleball. God, can you imagine what the sound of that must be like? Dear Lord. Smash Parks have pickleball courts, food, drinks, axe throwing. Oh, good. This is going to go.
Yeah.
Duck pin bowling, karaoke, live music, and other events per release. Axe throwing and pickleball. What has happened to our society? Can I just, what the hell has happened to us as a people? Smash Park wasn't ready to give exact locations, but a spokesperson said the company is looking at Edina. What was that? What was that? Did you say pickleball? Ooh, I like pickleball. Hey, Edina guy. I see there's that park that's off across town over there. I see guys playing pickleball all the time over there. Are you over there? Ooh, yes. Ooh, do I love the pickleball. Oh, it's a wealthy person sport. It's like kind of dumbed down ping pong. I love it. It is fantastic. Me and manservant Claude, we like to go on out there and dominate. As we're there. Now, manservant Claude's not here right now. He's with Mrs. Edina guy right now. They're playing something called Hide the French Sailor. I'm not sure exactly what that is, but manservant Claude is always my backup guy, ready to go whenever I need him. But we love the pickleball.
Wouldn't Edina guys fan sports be more like cloquet or croquet or
croquet? I don't go to that
here. Yeah, that's the city.
What is croquet. That's where hamburgers go to die, isn't it? Or something like that. I don't know.
I would think a croquet or polo would be more of his game.
No, what you see is what we have. When the polo requires a lot more skill, and I can't do that. And croquet.
Claude does polo.
Claude's fantastic. He polishes horses like you wouldn't believe. Manservant Claude does a fantastic job. But when it comes to croquet, I was fine with it. We had those British wickets. I would wear white. It was splendid. But then I went to a Target store. I don't know if you've seen these. There's a Target store, and up on the wall was like a kids' version. That was the end of that. I guarantee you, no one under the age of 40 is playing pickleball. So that's back to us again. Oh, pickleball. 30,000. And axe throwing, you say? Boy, I wonder which suburbanite I'll challenge than that. McNeil. Yes, Edina guy. Would you like to go and axe throw with me? No. I don't think that would be a good idea, considering how many jokes I make at your expense, Edina guy. And right you are, I'd have manservant Claude hold you in place while I chucked an axe at you. Ooh, just make sure it doesn't get Claude. I need him. Someone has to polish the yacht. Thanks, Edina guy. The other place is Roseville. There's no Roseville guy, by the way. Hey, how you doing? It's Roseville.
Italian guys in Roseville.
I don't. It's Roseville guy. Hey, how you doing? All right, good. Hey, thanks, Roseville guy. Woodbury guy or Maple Grove guy? Maple Grove sounds like a winner place for this. Now, I take any of the letters of hate and disgust, I understand there are people under the age of 40 that do play pickleball. I understand that. Not many, but sure. But are we going to see pickleball show up at the Olympics? I don't think so.
Oh, give it time. I would say maybe by 2030 we could see that considered as an Olympic sport.
But
they're going to throw anything as an Olympic sport.
Okay, so what's going to happen? I can already see this. It's going to be our team is all going to be like 50 and 60 year olds, and it's like the Chinese are going to bring out their 16 year old pickleball experts, and they're going to destroy us. Oh, no. Foul. That young man's pliable hips and legs make him able to move around a lot better than me.
It's easy to get good at sports when you have a dictator running your country.
I was watching the Paralympics. The Chinese mopped up on that. They won like 50 or so medals. We like got 20. Oof. They just dominated. The Ukrainians, by the way, came in second. A lot of Ukrainians getting medals in
that's
that.
Awesome, man.
That was great. If you didn't catch the Paralympics were fun. That was just great fun to watch. I enjoyed watching that quite a bit. Let's take a break. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Hey, we get to say goodbye to an absolute piece of trash. Tom Bach. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. As I mentioned here, the big story today out of Minnesota politics, Senator Tom Bach, the lying, double-crossing cheater, the once powerful Iron Range DFLer who recent years split from his party, announced he will retire at the end of his term. Now, no reminder. Tom Bach and Thomas Soney ran as DFLers and then won. And then the second they did, they quit the Democratic Party. They took all the DFL's resources. They took all the DFL's money and they were very happy with that. And then they basically stabbed the DFL in the back and ran over to the Republican side. I'm not going to miss you. Let the door hit your big wide butt on the way out, Tom. Bach, and by the way, and I want to make sure I say this, it was incredibly short-sighted for Bach to do this for one very simple reason, is that you're going to need the Democrats to hold that district, to keep your district relevant. The Republicans were facing a math problem. The metro area is taking away the power, the ability to gerrymander, especially from outstate. And so they looked at you, Tom. They played you like a freaking fool. Gazelka and those guys, they saw a dupe, and you went and said, "Yeah, I'm a dupe." Because then when you jumped to their side, you think that they were going to save your district? You think that you were going to be their buddy? Oh, the heck with that. They're going to chop your district up and use it to save other Republicans who actually matter to them. I mean, you used to have a strong DFL presence up there. You're not going to have it. And now, once again, I've run the numbers. You're going to need the DFL on your side for Iron Range issues. And the DFL is the party of unions. Do not trust a Republican when it comes to unions. Do not trust them. They will kill your union tomorrow if they can. Heck, I see it constantly with this teacher strike here. The Republicans talking about those lazy teachers. They need to get back to work. All of a sudden, I'm all union guy. They don't care about unions. They're showing their true colors with the teachers. They're showing their true colors with the medical unions. Nurses union and like. No, they don't care. And you need a strong labor representative and representation up on the Iron Range. But they played you, Tom. Sure, you got to play it like, I'm with the cool kids now. You're with psychopaths that think Donald Trump was a great president. You're with psychopaths who think the 2020 election was stolen. You're with psychopaths who don't think COVID was real. So don't come back to me, Tom, and act like you did something noble. You're an immature little moron who basically got played like a freaking fiddle. Good job. And let the door hit your butt on the way out. Tired of you, man. And you're a lying cheat, too, if I can say that. I don't have any problem with it. You knew you were going to be dumping the DFL party when you were running the last time, and yet you kept, hey, I'm a proud DFLer. Took their money, took their help, and stabbed them in the back. Yeah, you're a piece of work, Tom. Now, an independent from Cook in his sixth Senate term and the chair of the Capital Investment Committee, his retirement opens up the Senate District 3 seat representing Coochiching, St. Louis, Lake, and Cook counties at a time when Democrats are looking to keep their footing in outstate Minnesota. Bach said representing the region has been one of the greatest rewards of his life. Sure it has. And you're basically, you know, jeopardizing it up there. But hey, whatever. Hey, no, you go ahead. You go and put your sulfur mine up there. Your one sulfur mine, and act like you did something good. And then when they poison all the land of the Boundary Waters, and they poisoned all the air of the Boundary Waters, and no one wants to go to the Boundary Waters anymore because it's a toxic waste pit, and all of a sudden tourism dollars, which is your number one thing up there, all of a sudden dries up. Then all of a sudden it's like, hey, wait a second here. It's like the Republicans were only taking money from the big corporate interests and didn't have Minnesota's best interest at heart. They lied. Freaking idiot. God, you moron. Anyway. He led the DFL caucus for nearly a decade, ran for governor as a Democrat in 2010. He lost. In 2020, with the Republicans control of the Senate, Bach and Tomasoni of Chisholm opted to split from the DFL and form an independent caucus. Both cited the distaste for the growing partisanship and the chance for the chair committee. Oh, you mean the people who are screaming, kill Democrats? And so you heard that. Kill the Democrats! Round them up! And you said, you know what? I'm going to go with those guys. Sure. Sure. Sure thing there. Bach has been a fixture in the legislature. He has this long legacy of representing the Iron Range. He's become a close. This is Senate Majority Jeremy Miller of Winona, the Republican, praising him. Yeah, apparently, they couldn't find a Democrat to praise him. And so, yeah, so here's the brand new majority. Sure, yeah, he's great. Bach is 29th legislator so far to plan to retire. He's a former union negotiator, lives on Lake Vermilion. You live on Lake Vermilion and you're for toxic sulfur mining. Dear God, you're an idiot. Dear Lord, you're dumb as a brick, man. Well, they promised me they're going to be clean. They've never done it clean before. But they promised me, so I'm going to trust them. They've never done it in the hundreds or so mines that they've done. They've never done it close. They're promising this time it's going to be clean. Can I swing the door so it hits your ass a little harder on the way out? Can I actually just grab that door and whip it in there, you know? Can I do that? I don't have any sympathy or pride or anything in a guy who, and once again, he and Tomasoni knew they were going to double cross the DFL, but yet ran as DFLers. So my guess is this. Tom Bach went to the Republicans and say, hey, you guys are going to allow me to run in this district, you know, unopposed on the Republican side, right? No. Really? So he decided, that would be my guess of what happened. His all of a sudden, his new Republican buddies were like, oh, no, we're gonna run a far-right loon ball in this district. So you better get ready to be far-right loon ball yourself or else you're going to get out of the way. Now, one thing I want to say, as you look at, I've pulled up the new map, all of Cook County, all of Lake County. And by the way, do not think that the North Shore is far-right Republican. Sure, a few up there. But there's a lot of liberals up there. There's a lot of lefties. So that's not exactly a heavy-duty Republican stronghold by any means. He comes down into Duluth. He basically just skirts the north side of it. The 8th district is most of Duluth. But he gets he basically gets you know a good chunk of southern St. Louis County, all right? And from there, he goes, it kind of curves around all of, like, Virginia by Wabeck, Eveleth, Mountain Iron, all that's part of the 7th District now. So he basically goes up to the Canadian border, and then he goes west, International Falls, and, well, I mean, it's North Ohm, Big Fork. It's got some definite, and well, it's got the Beausefort reservation is in there. The Netlake area, that's in there. Native American reservation. So you got definitely some Republican areas, but you got a lot of lefty areas in that district. You got a lot of lefty areas. And maybe that's what the problem is maybe he realized, well, still my best chance at winning this would be as a DFLer. But now I've poisoned that water hole. And so now either I've got to become far right, you know, incredibly far right guy, or all the DFLers that backed you up who have been looking, have been salivating at the idea of getting you out of office. They're not too eager to join your independent campaign. So maybe that was your deal. Hey, can I take it back? I'm really a DFLer. And then as soon as the election's over, psych! I'm not going to miss him. Brett, I'm not going to miss him.
No, not after many of the shenanigans he's pulled over.
Him and Tomasoni. Tomasoni, all my best on your health. But, dude, you're a jackass.
Still what he did to Dayton.
Yeah.
In that session a few years ago.
Yeah, oh, God, what Bach did. Oh, God, double-crossed him.
Yeah.
And by the way, you know, that was the foundation. I was like a lot of people. If you're going to work with the Republicans most of the time, go be it. And so he decided to. But he decided to do it in the most jerkish way he possibly could by basically waiting till he got elected as a DFLer and then, whoopsie, what was it, a day later, switch parties after he got elected?
Not
as
long.
Oh, God, what a piece of crap. Just an absolute jerk. Not going to miss you. Not going to miss you. And personally, I'm going to do everything in my power to make sure your name's never on any freaking building if you want to know the truth, because you're a jerk, dude. And that's just that. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. No problem saying any of that. Someone has to tell him it. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Suburbs, man. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We talked a lot about COVID with Dermot, but let's get the Minnesota coronavirus update for today in right now. COVID-19 update from the Minnesota Department of Health includes 470 newly reported cases, 10 newly reported deaths. 10 people died yesterday of COVID. This is not over, people. This is not over. The state's COVID-19 death toll now is 12,312. Yesterday's update includes case data that was reported in the 24-hour period ending at 4 a.m. on Wednesday, March 16th. The test positivity rate on the seven-day rolling average through March 9th is down again, 3.1%, having been as high as mid-20s. Anything over 10% puts Minnesota in the high-risk threshold. Anything over 5 is high community threshold. So, through March 16th, the number of people with COVID hospitalized in Minnesota was 263, down from 288 reported on March 15th. Of those hospitalized, 32 people in intensive care, down from 40, 231 in non-ICU care, down from 248. As of March 13th, the state reported that 3,887,607 people have received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine, 3,674,568 people have completed the vaccine series. There is 2,544,291 Minnesotans who are up to date with their vaccine shots, which includes boosters. 1,424,107 Minnesotans have gotten COVID. Now, and I want to make sure I repeat what Dermot said, is that they didn't have people out there saying, "Don't make me wear a mask." They didn't have people out there saying, "Vaccines are violating my freedoms." Didn't. They got to 80% vaccinated fairly quickly in Ireland, as quickly as they could. And they basically reopened the country because at that point, there's no real reason to keep things shut down. But they're still taking it seriously, but they're still, it's back to work. On St. Patrick's Day, do you want to know the difference between Ireland and the United States right now? Is Ireland actually has people that care about the rest of their citizens. They're not a bunch of selfish, greedy jackasses who sit there and talk about, "You're making me wear a face diaper." Just pathetic. "I want my restaurant open because I'm a lazy jackass. I'm tired of you people." And did you hear when I talked about, did anyone push against this? No. The public good was the bigger priority, not petty selfishness, not individual profit. There's not much to like there. It was a tough situation. But at the end of the day, the Irish came to the realization that caring for the rest of the Irish was far more important than basically individual selfishness. And here we are today. And here we are today in this country, where Republicans are still out. Marjorie Taylor Greene was on the House floor, I think, this morning saying COVID doesn't exist because they turned a pandemic into a political football, because the people on the right have been so brainwashed, they can't think for themselves. Not anymore. They can't. They have to be told what to think, and they eagerly gobble it up. "Oh, we're supposed to back up Russia." Russia's attacking Ukraine independently. They're right in doing it. Why are we even there? There are Nazis in Ukraine, so this is all good. They open fire. As a matter of fact, if I may, read the story, the heartbreaking story that broke here. Picture of the guy, Minnesota guy, wearing a Twins hat. Jimmy Hill's last act was gathering food for hospital patients in Ukraine. The Monomedi native, 67, was killed on Thursday in the northern Ukraine city of Chernihiv when Russian forces attacked people standing in a bread line. The Russians attacked people standing in a bread line. That's your people on the right. That's who said that they were? When you allow other people to think for you, you say stupid things. Thanks, Republicans. You're the masters of that right now. He's the first U.S. citizen to die in the war that began when Russia invaded Ukraine on February 24th. Hill met his end during a typical selfless act, said his sister, Cheryl Hill Gordon of Albuquerque. Hill's longtime partner, a Ukrainian native, is hospitalized with multiple sclerosis and is too sick to leave her bed. As the Russian attacks intensified, the hospital ran short on food. Meanwhile, all of its remaining patients were too sick to leave. Every day, the hospital rations were fewer and fewer, Gordon said, and Jim goes out to find food for everyone in the hospital. He was a wonderful human being, very compassionate and humanitarian. He's a 73 graduate of Matamidi High School, was a psychologist and lecturer who'd been working in Europe for years, mainly in Ukraine, but also Lithuania and other countries. As the attacks in the town intensified in recent weeks, Hill began documenting them on posts on Facebook. Reliable sources say they have received info that Chernihiv would have been heavily bombed tonight. He posted on March 9th, I'm ordered in a bunker. I hope this is false and rumors, but we may be experiencing a greater hell tonight. The bombing last night was not intense, just the usual stuff. And the latest statement sounds weird. He posted on March 11th, power out, cold inside, hospital staff doing well, some food, siege here. Ukrainian army heroes are defending the city. I can only get connection near windows. It's a living nightmare, but we are alive, bombing throughout the day, helpless feeling. He was out once again, all you pro-Russian guys out there. Here was a Minnesotan living over there. He graduated a long time ago, but he'd from here originally. Out collecting food for the hospital patients because there wasn't enough food in the hospital. And the Russians opened fire on him and gunned him down. I had a little back and forth with a guy today as we were talking about the story about the Russian bounties on American soldiers. Now, once again, the CIA came on out and did not dismiss it, but they said they had moderate to low confidence in the story. They did also say there was some interesting coincidences between some of the things the Russians were saying and the death of certain U.S. soldiers, but they could not find enough evidence to validate it. But they still said they had moderate confidence in it to low confidence in it. But needless to say, there's still the chance that did happen. Just can't get it confirmed. The minute that story broke, Trump took Russia's side. Trump took Russia's side and defended them. That was around the same time that Donald Trump went out and insulted all the World War I veterans. Remember that? You guys follow him because you're brainwashed and you don't even realize it. And as I say this, you probably are saying, that's not true. Hillary Clinton's killing babies in the basement of a pizza parlor. Why do you even say stuff like that? Why? Why do you even say stuff like that? You say stuff like that because you know everything I say is true. You know it. You do. You know it. But in your own mind, you've convinced yourself, I'm going to stay with this devil. And so you create a fake, worse devil to validate your love of someone you should not be loving. That's what's going on here. Yeah, Donald Trump is horrible, and he's clearly not for the American troops, and he was ripping on World War I veterans and initially took the side of Russia when that story about bounties on American soldiers' heads came out. He was all that stuff. They're there, but Hillary Clinton is killing babies and drinking their blood in the basement of a pizza restaurant. Oh, my God. So, it's not the best, but I'd rather be with that instead of Hillary Clinton. No, Hillary Clinton didn't do that. You're making up outrageous statements. This is QAnon. This is the whole thing about QAnon. You're making up outrageous statements because it's the only way you can validate following this lunacy. And they're playing the fiddle and you guys are following right along. You guys don't think for yourselves. And it's sad. It's sad and pathetic. So they told you to not trust medicine and science. The same, by the way, same medicine science. You guys have no problem with if your daughter breaks their arm and you have to go to the emergency room, God forbid. All of a sudden, the same exact doctors and science that brought you the vaccines for the coronavirus and told you to wear a mask and was talking about social distancing, that same exact science is perfectly fine for you now because I got my little Susie's hurt. All my best to little Susie. You don't even hear yourselves. Sure, I get the flu shot and I've been vaccinated for everything else, but this vaccine, Jesus told me not to get this vaccine. Jesus did. Jesus is like, whoa, 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 leave me out of this. Whoa, did you read the Gospel of Matthew? Take care of the sick. You know, I'm pretty much pro-vaccine here, so leave me out of your delusional rants. Now, you guys are brainwashed, and this is where we're at as a society, and the reason why we have so many dead in this state and so many people that were sick in this state is because when doctors and science came out and said, hey, get vaccinated, be safe, you guys said, hey, Tucker Carlson, what should we do? Don't trust them. I'm not going to trust them. I'm doing my own research. How's that going for you? Oh, that's right. You're idiots. That's right. You didn't do any research. You basically just took the talking points that those screaming talking heads told you to say and went and ran with them. That was your research. Fools. And by the way, true, and this is one of the things that really makes the right mad. Jesus was pro-vaccine. Gospel of Matthew. You know, take care of the sick. Quick way to do it. Take a look what the Irish have done. They got all vaccinated, and then basically society can open up again. And that's the thing which is crazy about you guys. You don't even realize, if you all just get vaccinated, we get 80% in the state, and done. We've opened everything back up because you do have so many people who are vaccinated that the likelihood there's going to be a major outbreak is dramatically limited. Then you can go back to getting your jalapeno poppers over at Applebee's. Then you can go out and get your beers and your coffees and go to a movie theater and not really have any people batting an eye. No, things are back. Instead, you basically refused to get vaccinated, demanded the world get left open, and then all of a sudden you had the audacity to say, my daughter's sick with the COVID. You need to help her now, same doctor that I was calling a Nazi the other day. Until you guys wake up from all this, man. Until you wake it up from this. And like I said, maybe the best part of this whole little rant I'm doing today is what Dermot said about Tucker Carlson. Is that on St. Patrick's Day, if you would emulate the Irish, not because of green beer or necessarily because of the delicious corned beef and cabbage, but on their sensibility, their practicality, and their ability to appreciate reality, because that's what the Irish do very well, then maybe, just maybe, you would be like the Irish when they said, have you seen this insanity that's Tucker Carlson? Oh, man, I had a Tucker Carlson moment. You would realize that Tucker Carlson is a laughingstock and the world thinks he's a joke. As I do, too. I don't watch him because I don't need to go see stupidity. Just maybe, you might actually start waking up from your self-induced fog and realizing the people who have been telling you what to think and say for the last 15 years do not have your best interests at heart. They don't. Be more like the Irish. The world will make more sense to you if you do. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Let's take a break. Come on back. One final segment before we wrap up, and Native Roots Radio, I'm Awake, comes up after that. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Because I don't drink anymore, my entire St. Patrick's Day is a massive pile of corned beef and cabbage.
Hey, nothing wrong with that. It's good stuff.
Delicious. Oh, and you know what the best part is? This is American ingenuity at its finest. Corned beef hash, man. I'll have the corned beef and cabbage, chop everything up, mix it together, put a fried egg on it tomorrow morning. Mwah, magnifique. Magnifique. You like corned beef hash?
Oh, yeah.
You don't get the stuff out of the can, do you?
No.
Oh, for goodness sake. Get the good stuff. Find someone that actually makes good corned beef hash. Oh, it's as good as it gets. That's what I always had. It was when St. Patrick's Day, we had the corned beef and cabbage, and then the next day it was even better. It was, yes, potatoes, cabbage, corned beef, chop it all up, put it together. Yum. Oh, one of my favorite things. So that's my plan tonight. I watch
a little basketball tonight too. Yeah,
got basketball and a pitch. This is gonna be me. I'm just gonna take the slow cooker and I'm just gonna plop it down on my lap and just start eating right out of it. Delicious. Speaking of delusional nutbags, the Republican Senate. They have a bill that will give the state medical practice board discretion to turn down investigations of complaints made against doctors for comments made on social media, as long as they're not directly related to patient care. Wow.
I wonder if this is pertaining to a specific individual.
I wonder where this came from. The witch doctor medical. No, it's, I don't know what the name of this. Legislation sponsored by Richard Dreheim, Republican from Madison Lake, comes as former senator Scott Jensen, a family doctor with outspoken views on COVID-19, runs for governor. Yeah, I think it came from there. Jensen has often cast himself as defending his first American rights after the Minnesota Board of Medical Practice received complaints made against him for controversial statements he made on social media about the COVID-19 pandemic. Once again, it has the ability. You guys mistake the ability, the thing that it's not violating his First Amendment rights. He said what he said, but there are consequences for saying things sometimes. You can't yell fire in a movie theater. You will get arrested for that. See, it's that simple. And if he's a doctor and he's out there saying, you know what cures cancer? Meth. Well, guess what? We reviewed your social media post that said that you should not follow medical rules. Yeah, that's not medical. That's you basically trying to use your free. What you have done is taken that oath you've made to help and care for people and trust the medical sciences and basically decided that my freedom of speech is more important than that. Yeehaw! Can I do the hillbilly voice every time? Yeehaw! There it is. I'm a QAnon doctor. Yeehaw! You need leeches. Oh, good leeching. Oh, who doesn't love a good leeching? Dreheim said in an interview that doctors should be able to speak freely. Once again, he's been able to speak freely. You think the First Amendment gives you freedom from consequences? That's not what the First Amendment does. We should have the freedom of speech no matter what your profession is, he said, saying Jensen is a perfect example of that. Once again, Dreheim, his freedom of speech is fully intact. He said what he said. No one stopped him. You can mistake freedom for speech, freedom of speech for freedom from consequences for said speech. And those are two very different things. Asked if he's supporting Jensen's bid for governor, Dreheim said he's not endorsing a candidate until after the state GOP convention. Coward. Well, I think we know where you're leaning, dude. Ruth Martinez, executive director of the Board of Medical Practice, says the agency has not taken a position on the legislation. Martinez said the board strives to be equitable in its processing, giving the board board discretion about which complaints to investigate could raise questions about fairness. He said the board currently investigates all complaints it receives. As it should. It's a board. Complaints made to the board are not public unless a disciplinary action is taken. But Jensen has publicized the times he's received letters from the board about his complaints made against him. So once again, his freedom of speech is fully intact. And the criticism they had of him was private until Jensen himself shared the criticism. I said what I said, and they basically said they're upset. But let me show you to this, even though they did it in private, huh? I'm the persecuted one. Oh, God. What a little tulip you are. In October, he said in a YouTube video that he received his fifth letter from the Board of Medical Practice saying his license was being investigated. Jensen was removed from TikTok for making incorrect or misleading claims about the pandemic, and his Facebook advertising was curtailed for similar reasons. So once again, he is, even non-medical people have said, dude, you're a loon ball saying some of this stuff. We're not going to let you say it. And yet, here we are with a senator saying, you got to let him say what he wants to say. What I mean, seriously, Dram, what happens if a person comes on out and says, you know what? The treatment for cancer, sweet, sweet bath salts. That's what it is. And he says this on Twitter. You're saying there shouldn't be any investigation or any consequences or something like that? Because that would seem to me to be reckless, like everything Scott Jensen has said about this at this point. And I'm sure we're about to get the, well, I was only saying people should have the choice. Dude, we got tons of audio of you, tons of footage of you, and we know exactly what you said. This is called cover your ass legislation. That's what that is. Have a good one. Happy St. Patrick's Day to everyone out there. Native Roots Radio is up next. We are back on a Friday. Till then, see ya.